You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, we're celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit corin.com. Hello, welcome to Japanese. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcast live from our studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is so mystery for many people, so I'll try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Irina Yoshida of Yoshida Restaurant Group in New York. Irina's father, Tony Yoshida, is a quintessential figure when you talk about Japanese food culture in New York. He owns and operates multiple Japanese restaurant and groceries, including legendary Kyoya Sunrise Mart and Angel Share. And Irina is supporting him as the COO of the company. So today we'll discuss how Irina's father started the business, the unique concept of the brands they operate, Irina's upbringing as a Japanese American, and their new project Japan Village in Industry City, and much, much more. But before we start, Japan is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. And also, if you have any ideas about the topics of the show or show guests, please let us know. You can email us at japanneeds@heritageradionetwork.org or akikokatema.com. Now let's start a conversation with Irina Yoshida. Hello, Irina. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
So this is exciting. You know, your father is a real legend in this country, in New York City culture, everything. So I really thank him for building such a great city. So you're born and raised in New York in a very food-rich environment. So what did you eat when you grew up?
I definitely did eat Japanese breakfast growing up. My mother would make Japanese food. Also, during summers, I would always go back to Japan, visit my grandparents, and I would always eat Japanese food there as well. Mm. But I would say it was a mix. I would have like breakfast, cereal for breakfast, something really quick and easy.
Right. So but when you say Japanese breakfast, I think it's a key question. What was on the plate?
Definitely grilled fish, also white rice, pickles, and miso soup.
That's called Ichiju Sansai. That's like a really the key principle of Japanese health.
Yes.
Right? So one soup and three dishes.
Yes.
And always rice and pickles.
Yes. And also natto. I love natto. So I always had natto growing up.
Oh, well, that's the bomb keyword. Yeah. I mean, we had a natto guest before, but that's really known for boosting your health. Mm-hmm. Not just like people think it's gooey and stinky, but I think there is a chemical called the pyrazine that creates the smell of coffee and a chocolate. Mm. So I have a specific brand that has this more pyrazine smell.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
what is that brand? Is that Japanese?
Yeah, it's in Japanese.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe we can talk about natto in another episode. So as a Japanese American, grew up in New York and surrounded by the rich Japanese culture, how do you see yourself? Like more American, more Japanese?
I definitely am more American. I believe that I am an old soul, though. A lot of my friends, even my relatives, think I'm an old Japanese man. I think that might be associated with my relationship with my grandfather. And it really evolved with food. Whenever I went to Japan over summer vacations, I would always eat dried sardines, ume, Japanese pickled plum, Also, soramame, especially over the summer. So all those types of food and snacks always went well with sake or shochu, which my grandfather loved. So I think I definitely am an old Japanese soul for sure at heart.
I do think maybe because you appreciate that kind of classic old culture because you are away from the original country.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I always looked forward to going back to Japan over the summer. That was always how I spent my summer vacations as well. But coming here, that really wasn't as available when I was much, much younger. So I think with that said, my father's restaurants would always have some sort of Japanese ingredient that I was very familiar with whenever I went back to Japan. So it was nice to see that connection here.
I think your position is very unique and kind of, to me, very important from now on, especially because you know really the depths of Japanese food culture and this market in America that you grew up in. So you have the strong bridge, like really strong, you know, kind of like you can't see the Japanese culture from both sides, and there are not so many people doing it.
Right. I mean, there's definitely so many experts out there, though, that have so much knowledge. And I always feel like I'm learning so much more from them whenever I meet them. You know, let's say at a sake event, I'm learning a lot about sake through them as well. So it's nice that the community and just the strong interest that there is in terms of Japanese culture and food has been just growing and growing. And it's nice that it is a very small and tight-knit community.
And I think your generations, there's the second generation of Japanese food business people.
Yes, for sure. there's many of us, actually.
And I heard, did you go to Hoshiko? That's like the...
I did, yes. So I did go to a place called Enna. Ikue, but before that I went to Hoshuko.
That's called a supplementary school for you know, American kids with some Japanese relationship.
Yes.
To educate Japanese culture and all those things.
Yes,
right?
Every Saturday. So I remember growing up, you know, when my friends from American school had a day off, went to the park or movies, I would always have to go to school on Saturdays. But looking back, I'm very grateful that my parents sent me to Japanese school.
And you made friends, that you said it's a community.
I did make friends. It really was a tight-knit community. You know, I think we're all doing different things at the moment, but it's we all are, you know, in touch through social media and whatnot.
So. Right. That's very good and hopeful to me.
Yes.
Yeah, I spoke to, I think, a couple of them, and they have the same idea of this very niche concept of being Japanese American.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, in New York. All right. So so as I said in the introduction, you're a daughter of one of the founding fathers of the Japanese food culture in the U.S. So before we get into what you do, let's talk about your father, Tony Yoshida. Your real name is Tadao Yoshida-san. And where is he from, and when and why did he come to the States?
So he actually was born in Niigata, in the West Coast, but grew up probably when he was 6 months old, moved to Yokohama. So Yokohama was one of the first international harbors or ports that opened up in Japan, and that is where he was really exposed to Western culture. There were certain American clubs, per se, where he was able to try different classic cocktails that came from the U.S.
Wow.
But I think through meeting people there, he was very influenced by really having a lot of freedom. He really wanted the American dream. And I think the more he spoke to all these individuals that were not from Japan, the more he, you know, was determined to really go to New York and make it there. So that's what he did. He went to New York in 1969, and he's been here ever since.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, and I also heard that he graduated from, like, really one of the top universities in Japan.
Yes, he did go to university in Japan, and he worked in a corporate environment as well for a few years, and I think that also was very eye-opening. He didn't want to be in a corporate environment and wanted to really explore the world, and that's one of the reasons why he came to New York.
Right. So such an entrepreneur. He knew himself. So your father successfully built a Japanese food business, which includes multiple restaurants and retail shops. And as far as I know, it's Angel Share, Kyoya, Village Yokocho, and Panya, Sharaku, and Sunrise Mart, of course, and Japan Village. And within that is Akraichi. So did I miss anything?
Yeah, no, it's interesting because one of the first things that he actually opened was an ice cream shop.
Wow.
Back in 1971 on St. Mark's. And it was probably the only eatery on St. Mark's at that time. There was a music venue called Electric Circus that Andy Warhol at that time was also involved in.
Wow.
And the ice cream connection, the shop, it was interesting. It had Japanese ingredients here and there in it. So wasabi, green tea, ginger, black sesame. And the way he attracted customers at that time was to have all these psychedelic names for the ice cream. And so attracted a huge, East Village kind of crowd, a hippie crowd as well at that time. And from there, since it was so seasonal, because it was better for warmer weather outside, he was contemplating as to what he could do during the winter or colder seasons. And that's when he decided to make soy burgers and tofu burgers with brown rice, carrot ginger dressing, and also some sort of steamed broccoli and carrots.
It sounds like this is the most popular food right now.
It's interesting. It was definitely kind of like the macrobiotic type of cuisine that was also part of, I think, Japanese culture as well.
So he was really ahead of time.
He was definitely interested in kind of inventing different recipes and dishes. So, so from there it kind of evolved into more Japanese little by little. And his next venture was Around the Clock, as well as Dojo. So Dojo restaurant used to be on St. Mark's. The ice cream shop was right before that, and then he converted to Dojo restaurant. And that also was the same type of cuisine. It was the soybean burger, tofu burger, but he also started to introduce a lot of yakisoba, ramen, yakimeshi, and also had burgers, though. So it was kind of an American diner type of cuisine, but with a Japanese twist to it.
So kind of he opened an entrance to experience the way it was Japanese, but the entrance is really easy to go in because there's a burger.
Yes, yes.
And you said back in 1971, there's not many eateries, and he really created Japan Village with other entrepreneurs too.
He did, definitely. I mean, there were other entrepreneurs at that time when he was there as well that I think it was also about community. You know, they felt safe that they were able to do something in the same area together. And there was not much overlap as well, so everyone brought their own expertise, their own interests in Japanese food, and were able to flourish the village. So, yeah.
Wow, so grateful. Yeah, it's such a cool area, right? And St. Mark's now, it's almost, you don't think of St. Mark's without Japanese, word of Japanese. So that's crazy. Okay, and do you know what challenges he faced, your father faced?
I think definitely at that time, I mean, he was challenging himself. So I think it was a huge learning experience for him to see how he can make it with not understanding English, really not bringing anything with him, not knowing anyone. But fortunately for him, there was a small Japanese community of professional wrestlers, I believe, from the New York Athletic Club. So he became friends with them and really helped him out in the sense of, you know, making sure that they were there for each other and kind of made a community of their own. But also with that said, there was, during that time, there was a lot of racial tension and a lot of riots as well. So I think just to experience that, to be there at that time, you really had to have big guts. You really had to, it was almost a survival.
Right. Yeah, I think Japanese food is now kind of like very, you know, very thriving, good image food. But back then it was just one of the ethnic foods, right? And I think Nobu in the 80s started to be more, you know, introduced high-end Japanese.
Yes.
But until then, that was more kind of unknown,
yes,
mysterious, even more mysterious than now.
Yes, definitely.
Right. Okay, so now let's talk about your food, your responsibility. So what do you do?
I'm an operating officer, so I do work closely with my father and my brother, who's also part of the family business. Right now, I'm definitely concentrating a lot in Japan Village. I do a lot of operations in the back end, making sure everything is going well with our staff, the training, as well as menus. Also coordinating a lot in terms of whether it be events or vendors from Japan even that do want to kind of have a connection out in Japan Village to introduce their products.
So sounds like you have like hundreds of responsibilities. yeah, we're going to talk about each concept later, but so how did you know you're going to kind of help you or join a company and help you with that?
I definitely grew up in this industry. I would always go into construction sites with him. I was always wearing a hard hat. I would always eat at his places as well, and whether it be breakfast or, you know, dinner or something. But I did definitely want to do and find something on my own as well before I joined the family business. So I did go into cosmetic corporation. I was also working for a fashion designer, a museum, and an interior designer that also did restaurant bar design. So I think all those experiences that I had, I was able to apply to my family business in some sense. And it was also very eye-opening to me. But it was always in the back of my head. It definitely was about timing. So I was always curious about when I should join. But I think at the right time when I was working at a corporation, I didn't really have that passion with the corporation I was working in. So I decided to try it out. I did do a lot of administrative work growing up as well from high school. But this time I was actually able to focus 100%.
Right, more managing.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. Well, by the way, I can see you always dressed so well, and I knew you were in the visual part of this whole, you know, the business world. Yeah, so, but I think, like for instance, I know some Sakagura, you know, sake brewery people, the succeeding old business, but they experienced kind of global corporations and see, learn marketing or advertising, and they bring in the whole different view to the classic tradition, and they're now thriving. So I think that's great. And you have to make sure that you didn't like the corporation.
Right.
It's important.
They're a great corporation. It just wasn't. Yeah,
right, but the right place, you feel comfortable, right? Yeah, I exactly know how you feel. Yeah, you can do, or you may enjoy, but it's no, your soul is not there.
Right.
Right. Okay. All right. So, so how do you say your brother is working also? So,
yes.
Isn't it hard to have, you know, family members and?
Oh yeah, for sure. To be honest, it was difficult at the beginning, but we actually didn't have too much overlap. He did more of Sunrise Mart. I did more of the restaurant and bar aspect in terms of operating in the back end. So there was not too much overlap. However, with Japan Village, we were able to overlap. We always see each other every single day, whether we like to or not. But it's been great. We have been able to see our pros and cons of each other and been able to utilize that for our benefits. So it's been really good.
Right.
He's definitely my partner. So
is he older, younger?
He's younger, actually, yeah. But not by a lot. He's a year younger than me.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. That's interesting.
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this is a family business. Good part is you can trust. Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yes, for sure. Right. And yeah, I trust him, obviously, since he's my brother.
So. Right. And you knew each other from long time ago.
Yes, very long time.
Right. All right. So let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll discuss the unique concept of legendary shops and restaurants by Yoshida Restaurant Group. So please stay with us. Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Corin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. The knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan Asian to American, and that is why they are located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Corin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Corin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit corin.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Korsha Wilson, and I'm the host of A Hungry Society here on HRN. A Hungry Society focuses on highlighting dope people doing amazing work in food, and we talk about how we can make the culinary world a more diverse and inclusive space. You can join the conversation by checking out A Hungry Society wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japanese, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Aki Katayama, and my guest today is Irina Yoshida, the CEO of Yoshida Restaurant Group in New York, which operates multiple food establishments, including legendary Sunlight Mart, Angel Share, and Kyoya. So let's talk about the concept of some of the legendary places that your family operates. So, so first of all, I think whoever is interested in Japanese food in New York, I'm sure they stepped into Sunrise Mart.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the concept of Sunrise Mart? When did it open?
So Sunrise Mart in the East Village opened in 1995.
Mm.
It was actually the same year as the one in Soho as well. And the concept was to specialize in all types of Japanese ingredients. So not just one type of product for the ingredient, but having an array, an assortment of different varieties to cater to different types of people.
Right. Well, that's why I spend way too much time at the restaurant. Once I go in, let's just pick one thing and end up spending like half an hour. Yeah.
But yeah, so we want to introduce, my father wanted to introduce all the Japanese produce, fresh produce as well. But also we wanted to include household goods, which is also available in the East Village location.
Right. And that was really the almost the only place I could find fish that's sashimi.
Grade yeah, in, right. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's really interesting. And then not just, you know, those food, but some like, you know, whisk for tea ceremony and so many different things to experience Japanese culture.
Definitely. And I think also he wanted a place for the Japanese community to be able to feel like they were back in Japan and be able to prepare all these Japanese home-cooked meals. So that's the reason why he wanted to open one in the East Village first. And then from there, the clientele, it really did start changing. It was people that really started to get very interested into Japanese food. Chefs as well. So I think just the culinary changes that have been happening throughout the past years, it really made the clientele also very happy to be able to find rare ingredients in Sunrise Mart.
Right. A couple of times I was asked to, food and industry professionals to have a tour at Sunrise Mart. Because it's like there's so many things, and where do you think personally, which one do you like? Like,
right.
I can't decide. So. Yeah, so that's a really good place. So you have now 3 Sunrise Mart locations?
We currently have 4. The most recent one being inside Japan Village in the Industry City.
Right.
So we have one in the East Village, one in Soho, and one in Midtown East.
Mm, right. Okay. And so another one that's interesting is Angel Share, which is totally influential cocktail bar and influenced many American bartenders, actually. And Shingo Gokan was the former head bartender of Angel Share. Was named the best bartender of the world in 2012 and came to the show on episode 54 and talked about his amazing experience at Angel's Share. Mm. Yeah, so when did it open and what is the concept of Angel's Share?
My father opened Angel's Share in 1993, so we just celebrated our 26 years of being open.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. And he really wanted to bring what he saw in Japan. He was a little bit surprised because in terms of cocktail making, Japan, these bars that he went to, it was always the classic way that the U.S. used to make the classic cocktails.
Right.
So, stirring, shaking, using jiggers, making sure all the cocktails were consistent. Consistency was very important. So when he came to New York, he was very surprised because a lot of it was like the movie Cocktails with Tom Cruise in it. It was all free pouring, neon colored cocktails. So I think he was like a little bit taken aback. He thought New York would have more of the classic cocktail scene that he saw in Japan, but he did not. So it was always in the back of his head that he did want to bring this type of style to New York when he was here, but he was finally able to open one in 1993 and to be able to make your own ice, use jiggers, and make your own infused syrups and house-made juices as well for the cocktails. So that's kind of the concept. It was a concept that was in the U.S.,
right,
which was brought to Japan, but then he tried to bring it back here.
Right. It's the cocktail making techniques as well as the details, paying attention to like super details too, and I heard the equipments, all those tools are very unique.
Yes.
So people like the Greg Baum, who came to the show with the Cat and the Kitten episode, he has a Cocktail Kingdom, and I think he sells and also like custom make
Japanese
style.
Yeah, we utilize the tools that Cocktail Kingdom also has, but yeah, it's been really great how the cocktail scene itself has just changed and flourished over the past years, and it is normal now to have your own ice and to make your own infused syrups and juices, and I think with Angel Share, the terminology Ichigo Ichie, so it's the first time and last time you may see that customer in front of you. So it has always been very, a very specific type of art form, very similar to a Japanese tea ceremony, where you don't really converse too much with the client that's in front of you, but you concentrate with precision to make sure that the cocktail is the best one that they will have, because you will never know when you'll see that person again.
Right. So that's Ichigo Ichie. Right. Well, that's interesting, right? That the cocktail culture in America will really like represent the concept of Ichigo Ichie, which I think is really underlying concept in whole Japanese society.
Yes.
Right. So, yeah, but again, I think Angel Share has played a platform for the classic cocktail culture, how it can be detailed, and there's another word, omotenashi.
Yes,
it's like a hospitality without expecting any service.
Yes, definitely.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's still the whole essence never changes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so proud to have that Angel's Share in New York.
Thank you.
Okay, so another one of my favorite is Kyoya. So when did Kyoya open, and what is the concept of Kyoya?
Kyoya opened in 2007. So the concept was to utilize local and Japanese ingredients.
Mm-hmm. That's a kaiseki.
Kaiseki, yes, kaiseki cuisine. So it was very about seasonal. I would say it's a little bit similar to farm to table as well, because they're able to source all these different types of ingredients from different vendors and people and farmers as well, and create some sort of dish that has Japanese flavors and profiles.
Right. And restaurants have tables as well as, you know, far back,
yes.
There's, you know, the tatami mat,
yes,
seating as well as the counter seating.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like a kaiseki, but it's a kappo, which is a concept of chef takes, you know, takes care of you depending,
yes,
on what you feel like eating tonight.
Yes, definitely. Right. And I feel like especially in the space that you're in, even the wood as well was brought from Japan. And there's different elements of that too. So when you're kind of in there, you do feel like you're not in New York City, especially since it's kind of tucked away on the lower level.
Right.
Which is nice.
Yeah, when I have dinner, then I go step out, like, where am I? That's the feeling. Yeah, well, that's great. And of course, I have to talk about Japan Village, which opened in the Industry City in November 2018. So first, for our listeners who have no idea about what the Industry City is, mm-hmm, what is it?
Industry City is a converted warehouses along the Brooklyn waterfront in Sunset Park. It's the closest station is 36th Street. You could get there on a D and R lines. It is definitely a destination where they attract a lot of creative and design offices, as well as many bakeries, breweries as well,
mm-hmm,
that want space to be able to showcase and create their product.
And including Brooklyn Kura.
Yes, Brooklyn Kura, we love. They're right, literally very close to us. and they have great things on draft as well. You can see, you can even taste all the sake that is not even available in other places too, which is great.
Right. Yeah, I've been to Industry City like every, I don't know, 5-6 months, and then they're growing.
Yes,
very
definitely.
Fast, solidly.
Definitely. I think every single week it feels like there's a different type of good energy that's just been increasing and increasing,
mm-hmm,
which is nice.
Yeah, and it's so beautiful too. And then there's some like eating space.
Yes.
And this beautiful view of the river and everything you have.
Definitely. Right. And there's a lot of artworks as well from different independent artists between that.
Right. So what is Japan Village?
Japan Village is a concept where we have a food hall with 11 eateries that is from ramen, house-made udon soba, rice bowls, Japanese Wagyu steakhouse, sushi, all these things, plus Sunrise Mart, the specialty market that we have. And we also have a liquor shop that opened in the middle of April, which is called Kuraichi, that specializes in not only sake, but we also have shochu and other hard liquors that are made in Japan.
Right. So this whole concept of, you know, the like St. Mark's, that's a great street to visit multiple Japanese food establishment. But this is more like concentrated, kind of like an Italy of Japan version.
Yes. I mean, it definitely is a smaller scale than Italy. But it's nice that our customers have also been people that have never been to Japan before, but they want to go to a destination and try different kinds of cuisines that pertain to Japan. There's also people that have been to Japan before, and they also want to kind of be able to explore and try different things to bring back memories that they had in Japan.
Right.
So it's nice that people do go there for a destination. And it's also our first time that we have ever opened anything in Brooklyn. So to have a Brooklyn community as well going there is really nice.
Well, that's great, because I think I live in Brooklyn, but surprisingly, there aren't so many Japanese related businesses.
Right.
So, yeah, I really appreciate that. Yeah, so what's the demographics of customers? Like, half Japanese people or...?
I would say it's half Japanese. There's definitely a very big Asian family clientele as well, but families for sure. And also people that live in Park Slope area, Fort Greene, downtown Brooklyn also come as well.
Right, so by going there, you can just have like whole Japanese experience, eat and shop.
Yes.
And then as an extension, you have Brooklyn Kwan and you can eat anything else.
Yes, definitely. It's definitely a good destination for, you know, eating and drinking, but also exploring and seeing all these different types of shops inside Industry City.
Right. Okay. And so you mentioned Kraichi. So Kraichi is interesting because you're focusing on Japanese, beyond something Japanese sake. Mm-hmm. Right? And shochu, I think, is becoming popular. We had guests about, you know, we've talked about shochu. Mm-hmm. Well, the shochu is great, and I think it's going to be a really big potential from now. But Japanese whiskey, if you drink cocktails, they're like, I think people fighting for Japanese
right.
whiskey in the market, bartenders really try waiting for something to arrive, and
yes.
it sells out quickly.
Definitely.
And I think other new things, the Japanese gin, Japanese
yes.
vodka,
yes.
things like that coming in.
Yeah, and we also have rum from Okinawa as well,
which
a lot of people are not familiar with. But we have that at Kuraichi. So.
Right. Well, the Japanese rum, well, that is important because Okinawa is famous for the special sugar.
Yes.
Right. So it's kind of a craft product.
It definitely is.
Yeah. I think one key word about Japanese spirits, it's tend to be more craft style.
For sure. Much more so like small batch. I think it's really also interesting that there are more and more beyond whiskey. Different types of hard liquors coming out. And it's also being utilized in not only Japanese-style cocktail bars, but just cocktail bars in general.
Right. So, well, I haven't been there, so I have to be really there. Yeah, it's hard to find concentrated Japanese alcohol beverage store like yours. I think that's the first one, right? In a way, beyond...
I think so. At least on the Northeast Coast.
Right.
But I think people are very surprised by the fact that we have more things other than sake.
Right. So Japan Village is a big project.
Yes.
So what is the biggest challenge or challenges?
I definitely would say space, for sure. We've never done anything as big of a scale. I also think, you know, we also want it to be a destination spot, but there's also a little bit of expectations that a lot of people have as well. So we're always, you know, even right now, we're still finalizing and making sure the menu is 150% the way that we want it to be. So we're always testing out recipes. We always want to introduce new things so it attracts different clientele as well. Or if someone came last weekend, maybe they might be able to see and explore something new this weekend.
Right. So I'm curious, though, out of all those 11 vendors, which one sells most kind of food?
I would say the udon and soba noodles that we make in-house. We do come up with different recipes and that changes like every other month as well. But I think people are very surprised that everything's just made on the spot.
I am surprised too. Fresh.
Yeah.
Wow.
And also takoyaki is always popular, okonomiyaki as well.
Can you talk quickly about takoyaki? What is takoyaki?
Takoyaki is a flour-battered ball, per se,
right.
With a piece of octopus in it, with ginger, scallion, with sweet okonomiyaki, takoyaki sauce on top. Usually it's otafuku, but
right.
otafuku sauce. And it's always been such a popular street food, especially during summer festivals, per se. It's a grab-and-go kind of food. So even kids love them too.
I think it's such a unique food, right? It's like, you know, by explaining like 30 seconds, you have so many new words for, right. you know, Japanese food lovers. Like, otafuk sauce, what is that? And then especially octopus doesn't come to as like fast snack or That's street true. Food.
Yeah.
But I think octopus is such a unique, uniquely precious Japanese ingredient.
Yes, definitely.
Right? It's a very... widely available in Japan, but cooking octopus probably is very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, takoyaki is such a perfect food.
Yes. Yeah. It works really well. I love takoyaki. I feel like I have it every week.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a texture contrast of fluffiness and inside a little chewiness, but Definitely. Not gummy at all.
Yes. We make ours a little bit crispy on the outside as well. So you kind of have that little crunch.
Yeah, I want to eat it right now. Right, so that's interesting. I didn't know that it was one of the most selling
items. Yeah, no, definitely, yeah.
Mm. So, well, it's worth visiting listeners to discover takoyaki and everything else at Japan Village. Okay, so, and I heard you went to Japan recently.
Yes, I went back in April, actually. And I was only there for a week, but I was able to go to Shodoshima. And also Kurashiki as well. It was great because I've never been to Shodoshima.
Me neither.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Mm. Well, where is it and what kind of place is it?
It's an island off of Okayama prefecture. It's also not too far away from Kobe as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a remote island. They're known, which I had no idea, that Japan grew olives. So they're known for olives, their olive oil, but not only that, they're also known for producing soy sauce as well as somen,
okay,
which is really interesting. Mm. So I was able to explore and walk around different various types of soy sauce factories that dated back from 400 years ago.
Mm.
And also the streets, just the aroma, it's all like fermented soybean smell in the air. So that was a really educational experience.
Interesting. By the way, I heard there is a farm raising, you know, the beef basically, and their feed is the olive.
Yes, like olive-fed washi gu. Yes.
Definitely very tasty, right?
Yes, it definitely was marvelous. I feel that there definitely is a hint of olive oil, but I was able to try that as well there. Mm. Somen was great. It's a perfect summer dish because it's so light and thin.
Mm-hmm.
I just had no idea that it was something that's not produced during the warmer weathers because the need to dry out in the air.
Right. So the listeners, the somen is like thinner, very silky, thin noodles, and usually chilled.
Yes, correct.
With ice cubes, actually.
Yes, definitely. And it's a great summer dish, especially right now.
Right. So, and then we went to Kurashiki.
Yes, Kurashiki. That was also my first time there, actually. I didn't know that I had so much family history there as well. So my mother, she's actually a modern dancer and choreographer.
Wow.
Yeah, she still performs to this day in Japan. But I went with her and my grandmother, and one of my great uncles was one of the founders of Kurabo, which produced a lot of different types of fabrics that helped flourish Kurashiki as it is right now. But it was interesting because there were a few founders, but in the portrait photo, he was the only one wearing Western wear, which is really interesting. But yeah, it was definitely a really great educational trip. But I always, you know, crave learning something new whenever I go back to Japan. So hopefully I can visit other prefectures.
Right. Well, that's interesting, right? Because now you decided to really be fully devote yourself in this, you know, Japanese food culture. So what's the inspiration like, you know, did you find anything like as not just not related to food, but
right. I think I definitely was able to explore in the past few years as well, different prefectures, but also visiting a lot of artisanal shops.
Mm.
And through conversation, You know, what was informed to me was that it is slowly decaying. A lot of people of younger generation want to move out of Japan or go into big cities. And therefore, there's no one after that to continue their craftsmanship, right. Which is really sad to hear. But, you know, it's not only in Japan. It's also globally as well. So to hear that, you know, it kind of made you want to do something for, you know, to flourish that craftsmanship or at least let people know about it. Because depending on different prefectures, they have a different type of craftsmanship that's catered to that prefecture.
Right. And I think thanks to all this information over the internet, some young generation just go back and then take over something dying. So that kind of thing. It's such a precious art.
Yes, definitely. And I guess that connects with Japan Village because we still are in the middle of expanding. So we have a izakaya and a cocktail bar that will open as well. But our second floor is actually a space where we're converting it to something beyond food. So we want to highlight all of these artisans from arts and culture and be able to kind of have a space for them to kind of help spread the word of their craftsmanship.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah, so we're excited for that.
Right. Well, please keep me posted. And then,
yes, definitely.
Yeah, but whoever wants to see your information about Japan Village, what is a website?
There is a website, japanvillagebrooklyn.com. Also on Instagram, it's Japan Village Brooklyn. So that would definitely be the best way to receive the most recent updates.
Okay, great. That's very exciting. Yeah.
Thank you.
So what is your plan? Well, short time, long term, or personal, or business, or whatever you want.
I think most immediate is to, you know, finalize Japan Village first. and then hopefully, you know, spread more awareness, I guess, continue doing what we're hopefully doing, which is to kind of flourish Japanese food and culture with others as well, because it is such a community-based hospitality industry. But yeah, who knows? Who knows what's next?
Right, that's a part of fun.
Yes.
Never know. okay, so how do you predict the future of Japanese food in this country?
I think it's always going to be evolving. You know, tourism to Japan the past 10 years has skyrocketed like no other. You know, a lot of friends even around me as well, they've never been to Japan before. But because of the food, they really were passionate about really just going there as a destination and just eating not only Japanese food. Japan offers amazing Italian food, French food. It kind of goes beyond into a whole global food scale. So for them to come back from Japan, be like, I had the best pizza.
It was in Japan. I heard that.
Yeah. Was really nice to hear that they appreciated the food culture in Japan.
Yeah, and I started to read more Japan-based non-Japanese people's blogs and websites. The detailed reports are just amazing. Wow, I'm learning a lot from them.
Yes, definitely.
Right. Yeah, I have to find out where they get that best pizza. Right. I keep hearing about it.
Yeah, no, apparently there are a few. I have yet to check it out, but
next trip. Right. Okay, so where can we find not just the Japan Village, but any updates online?
Online?
Yeah. Or anything. I mean, you can go to restaurants and
I think physically going to Japan Village or, you know, for me, I'm also kind of roaming around the East Village, so.
Okay, yeah. Oh, by the way, your restaurants don't have websites, right?
They do not. Majority do not at all.
Yeah.
It's always been kind of word of mouth. I think it is important to start kind of evolving and becoming a little bit more modern and having social media outlets and whatnot. But yeah, it's always been word of mouth.
Yeah. So I thought it was intentional. So that's exactly. Yeah. All right. So the Google and the find for where they are.
Yes.
So that's the best way.
Yes.
All right. All right. So thank you so much for joining us today.
No, thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun.
Yeah. So keep me posted.
Yes, I will. I definitely will.
All right. So, so listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or akikotema.com. And Japanese is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer today is Amanda Wong, and thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the food world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.